Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Indus Infra Trust Q2 FY26 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Amit Kumar Singh, the Chief Executive Officer of the Investment Manager. Thank you, and over to you, Mr. Singh.
Thanks, Arthur, and a very good morning to everyone. And a warm welcome to Indus Infra Trust earnings call for the quarter and half-year ended 30th September 2025. It's always a pleasure to connect with all of you once again and share the updates on our progress. Let me start by talking about the continued momentum we are seeing in our sector. Under the Honorable Prime Minister's Viksit Bharat 2047 mission, the Ministry of Road Transport and Highways has been leading several projects of national importance. We have seen a number of significant highway projects launched and approved across multiple states. For example, the six-lane Capital Region Ring Road in Odisha, with an investment of approximately 8,300 crores, 4,447 crores Mokama-Munger Highway Speed Corridor in Bihar, and 2,157 crores Marakkalam-Puducherry section along with the East Coast Economic Corridor. In Andhra Pradesh alone, 29 new projects spanning 272 km and valued at over 5,200 crores have been initiated to strengthen last-mile connectivity and ease congestion in key urban centers. Altogether, these initiatives are expected to generate more than 1.5 crores man-days of direct employment, improve logistics efficiency, and make travel safer and smoother across regions. From an investment point of view, India continues to be a global bright spot in infrastructure development. InvITs have now become an integral part of the country's infrastructure financing strategy. The sector is very close to touching almost 8 lakh crores of AUM and is expected to continue growing strongly over the next 5 years-7 years, supported by robust investor confidence, steady cash flows, and government's ongoing focus on asset monetization. Now, coming to key highlights for the quarter. As of 30th September 2025, our operational and financial performance at Indus Infra Trust continues to demonstrate our discipline. Our portfolio of nine operational HAM road assets has been performing strongly, and our leverage remains comfortable at around 31.6%, which is giving us good headroom to pursue future acquisition. Our annuity receipts have been timely, and the collection cycle remains healthy. On distributions, the board has approved a payout of ₹3.35 per unit for the quarter ended 30th September. This comprises ₹2.51 as interest, ₹0.10 as a dividend, and ₹0.74, which is ₹0.74 as a return of capital. The record date for this distribution is 12th of November 2025. With this distribution, our cumulative DPU for H1 FY26 stands at ₹6.6, and since listing, ₹20.80 per unit, continuing our track record of consistent and predictable returns to our unit holders. On the acquisition front, we are now in the advanced stage of due diligence for our next set of ROFO and non-ROFO assets. We continue to follow a disciplined and selective approach with a focus on quality and long-term value creation. Looking ahead, we see a strong and sustainable opportunity pipeline. Matured InvITs like ours are increasingly leading the acquisition of seasoned assets, and the model is clearly evolving from being a funding platform to becoming a long-term value creation engine. Our strategic priorities remain clear: operational excellence, prudent capital allocation, and responsible growth. With a strong balance sheet, stable cash flows, and alignment with the national infrastructure vision, our trust is well-positioned to play a meaningful role in India's multi-trillion rupee infrastructure journey. Thank you once again for your continued trust and partnership. Now, I'll just hand it over to Harshil to take you through the financial details for the period. Over to you, Harshil.
Thanks, Amit. Coming to Q2 FY26 financial performance on a standalone basis, the interest income on the loan extended by the trust to the SPVs was 189.24 crores, as against 185.05 crores in Q1 FY26. The increase in interest income was on account of debt onlent to Galgalia-Bahadurganj project to refinance the external debt in the SPV in the month of May. The dividend received during the quarter from the SPVs was 2.75 crores, which was utilized for distribution during the last quarter. Further, EBITDA, excluding for the impairment for the quarter, was 189.96 crores. The impairment was on account of difference in fair value and book value of investments. The reduction in fair value of investment is primarily on account of the cash upstreamed by the SPVs. The total borrowing at the trust level stands at 2240 crores, and the interest cost of the same during the period was 38.31 crores. The tax outflow getting represented in the standalone financials is on the other income earned by the trust at the rate of 42.744%. The profit for the quarter stood at 36.49 crores. Coming to H1 FY26 financials, the total income stood at 394.85 crores with an EBITDA of 382.91 crores, excluding the impairment. As compared to H1 25, the fall in revenue was on account of lower dividend upstream by the SPV, which was on account of release of encumbered cash by SPV during H1 25, which was there on account of the assets acquired at the time of IPO. The finance cost during the period has increased to 75.85 crores, which is on account of increased borrowing to refinance the external debt of GR Aligarh and Galgalia Bahadurganj project. Coming to the consolidated financials, on a consolidated basis, the total income was 139.66 crores as against 123.42 crores. Towards revenue from operations, and other income was 16.24 crores. The revenue from operations include finance income of 97 odd crores as against 155 crores in Q1 FY26. The reduction in finance income during the quarter was on account of the impact of reduction in bank rate, which we had factored in during the last quarter. The revenue from contracts was 26.31 crores as against 31.33 crores in Q1 FY26. Which included a GST claim of 5.84 crores during the last quarter. In relation to the NDCF at the SPV level, the cash flow from operations at the SPV and other income generated by the SPV worked out to 266 crores during the period, out of which 254.6 crores was distributed to the trust, 95.7% approximately. Post adjusting for finance cost, debtor reserve, trust level expenses, which has been captured on slide 9 of the presentation, the NDCF works out to 148.90 crores, out of which 148.38 crores is proposed to be distributed, resulting in a distribution of 3.35 per unit. The form of distribution was already captured by Amit earlier. Just to repeat, the record date for the distribution is November 12, 2025. Thank you, and we are open to questions.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. A reminder, if anyone wishes to ask a question, you may press star and one. Our first question is from the line of Hitendra Pradhan from Maximal Capital. Please go ahead.
Good morning, sir. So, sir, first question is on the distribution per unit. So, in H1 itself, now we have distributed 60% of what we distributed in the last financial year of 11.2. So, what will be the guidance for the distribution per unit for this financial year? And if you can throw some color on the various forms of return also.
Yeah, so I think just one maybe clarification or rectification. So last year we distributed 14.2 rupees. And the 6.6 put together of 14.2 is not, I think, still lesser than, 60%. It works out to around 46.5%. I think guidance at the start of the quarter, start of the year, we had given for 12.5 rupees, and we are very much, if you see what we have distributed in the two, or proposed to distribute in the first two quarters, is towards the guidance what we have given. Maybe we can beat the guidance as well. But last year was 14.2, which we had distributed. In terms of giving the breakup for the entire years, we can so of course, predominantly it is going to be, it's going to be interest only. And we'll have basically lesser dividend and maybe repayment also to the tune of say around 45 to 50%.
Okay. And secondly, sir, on the AUM growth guidance, so currently we are at around 6,700 crores. What is the expectation of the new projects which can be added to this in the remaining part of this 6 months and for next year?
In the remaining part of this, I can talk about 4.5 months almost, which is pending. I think we are going to almost add 4,000 to 4,500 crores of the AUM in this year, because most of the projects, which actually, are or will be acquired towards, maybe one asset of GR, which is Araria Galgalia package 2, that should be acquired within this quarter. And then two to three GR and two to three non-GR asset should be acquired in the Q4. So that will take our AUM to, incremental AUM to around 4,000 to 4,500 crores. So we should, we should take us to around 11 to 11,500 crores of AUM by this year. And next year, I think, we should be able to add almost 6,500 to 7,000 crores of the AUM to our, increased AUM from 11 to 11,500 crores. So that should take us, say, by end of FY 27, it should be around, around 17 to 18,000 crores.
And to reach this 18,000 odd crores, this can be entirely debt funded, or you would need more capital?
No, actually, see, for the next 6,000 to 7,000 crores, we can do debt funding, but we'll be reaching to, we'll be crossing to around 60 odd percent. So we made a 65%. So just to bring it down to a comfortable level, where we can again, acquire the next set of assets, we may have to go for resort to equity raising. So what we are planning, that maybe around say Q1, we'll raise around 800 to 1,000 crores, and maybe towards Q4, we will raise around say again 2,500 to 3,000 crores. That's the ballpark, the numbers we have in mind, depending on how the acquisitions strategy takes place.
Okay. So the current equity base is good for another 6,000 odd crores. 12,500 you can reach with that.
I can reach 12,000 crores ballpark, yeah, with the current equity. So we may acquire, say, whatever this 4 or 5 assets what we're talking this year, right? For this, we don't need to go for the equity raising. We can use our leverage and we can do this.
And then from there, you would need to raise 40% in equity and 60% in debt.
Yeah, ballpark. Maybe we may be a little conservative, so we can do a higher equity raising, but that will decide that time. How this, overall, say, acquisition strategy, shapes up.
Okay. And sir, in this H1, most of the InvITs, REITs, they have reported much higher NAV because the WACC has come down because of the lowering of the interest rates. While in your case, the NAV has not increased. So can you throw some light on why, that sort of a thing has happened?
See, actually, it's also a function of what's your base. First, I think you would appreciate that our base itself is, smaller. And even I think our WACC has also come down, if you see, from 7.1 to 7.01. But however, because of the lower leverage, right, this and the lower base, this even the 10 basis points, 9 basis points of, you know, the lower WACC is not working out to a very high, you know, increase in NAV. Second thing, if you see our NAV was some, I think 15 point something, 115.80, I think, as on the June 30th. Out of that, we distributed almost 3.25. So if you see that way, we are actually at currently at 112.5 or 6 ballpark. So our WACC is just increased, NAV just increased because the WACC is say around 5 to 10 bips. But had it been a higher base and would have been, the leverage would have been higher, I think the NAV would have been higher. But I think we see that. Let's see if you know how the interest rate moves. You can see the impact of that as well going forward. But that's again a function of it.
And going forward, let's say for the next 6,000 odd crore, when you acquire the asset using debt, what sort of NAV impact can happen because of that before that the fundraise?
That we haven't worked out. We have to see that because, you know, again, different assets have a different cap structure. And then we'll have to decide our cap structure as a function of what cap structure the, you know, basically the target SPVs have. So how finally we will take, you know, work out on our cap structure, maybe do we need to say, you know, deliver a couple of assets or, you know, couple of assets, because at the HAM level, you know, the assets leverage are higher, right? But at the InvIT, you're not allowed to have higher leverage. So that will be a function of how we works out our leverage depending on the target asset or, you know, cap structure. And then we can arrive at it. Then only we'll be able to say that.
Okay. Well, on slide number 6, you have mentioned a certain impairment of investments which has caused the reported EBITDA on a standalone to be lower. So, what is that, sir?
I think this impairment we have been explaining. Impairment is, maybe I'll ask Harshil to explain it better, but I think this is more like, you know, when you have more annuities being received, you have, you know, some assumptions you have taken, there's a some little bit, say, you know, change in those assumptions also. Everything will lead to some impairment, maybe, but I'll ask Harshil to explain it better. Yeah.
Jitin, coming to the full half year, you know, if you look at the impairment amount, that also factors in two repo rate cuts, which has happened. Plus, you know, if you look at the distribution which is happening, since these are finite life assets with a fixed revenue stream, you know, it is not like a toll asset where your revenue is going up. So that might compensate for a certain part of the distribution which we are doing. So in a finite life, with whatever amount we are upstreaming and distributing to the unit holders, that primarily gets adjusted from the asset value. So if you look at our March valuation number, it was 7,036 odd crores, which has come down now to 6,737. Now, if you look at the differential on a, which Amit was highlighting in the NAV, that is fundamentally the distribution which we had done in the Q1 of 3.25 rupees. That is also getting represented as an impairment here.
Okay. And sir, final one question on this, the incentive on acquisitions. So is it there only for third party assets or even for the promoter asset, if you acquire, the incentive will be paid to the investment manager?
The incentive is there for all the assets. However, you know, what we will take once we acquire, we take, you know, basically the AUM to a size, what will be a mix of basically a ROFO and non-ROFO assets, that will be evaluated that point of time. As of now, just to tell you, we haven't taken any incentive just because of the acquisition. And IMPS, whatever we had guided, we had given guidance, it remains at the same level. In fact, we haven't taken NPs of 10% of IMP last year, which we otherwise would have taken. So, you know, we are working in a very tight cost structure, and incentives all, once it takes to a size, then we'll see how to take it. That eventually we'll take it to the board and, you know, our NRC, and we'll get it approved.
Understood, sir. Thank you and all the best.
Thanks.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Rahul Nair from Axis Mutual Fund. Please go ahead. Mr. Rahul Nair, are you connected with us? As there is no response from the line of Mr. Rahul Nair, we will be moving on to the next question. The next question comes from the line of Deep Vakil from Bandhan AMC. Please go ahead.
Good morning, sir. Congratulations on a good set of numbers. Am I audible?
Yeah, you are audible, Deep. Hi, thanks.
Sir, sir, considering this impairment part, as you mentioned, so it will have no impact on consolidated numbers, right? Because, it's, I mean, as you mentioned, it's only on account of cash upstream by SPV to Inuit level.
Yeah, correct. So there's nothing which is changing at the console level. Yes, some you know, at least bits of repo cut plus cash being upstream, all these will lead to your impairment because this is not a toll asset where you can increase the growth and again you can increase the value so that you know you can restore the impairment. In our case, this is a defined life, defined number of annuities, and you know whatever comes in and gets distributed, of course that will lead to your loss in the valuation of assets, which you can term it as impairment as per the accounting standards. Yeah.
Okay. Sir, one more question. I mean, the reduction in revenue, as you mentioned earlier, is it, I mean, it is on a, I mean, on a console basis. I think you mentioned something on it is due to release of encumbered cash. Can you just throw some light there?
So, Deep, this was with respect to, you know, September 2024 financials.
Right.
So, when did the IPO, you know, because of the existing lenders which were sitting at the SPV level, there was a requirement of DESRA, major maintenance reserve, which was created and kept at that SPV level, you know, based on the existing debt. So once we refinanced that, you know, external debt post the IPO as well as by subsequently borrowing at the trust level, those cash got released in H1 FY25.
So, you know, whatever the SPV level and in the trust level, whatever reserves you need to make, you make that. And suppose there's an incremental amount which gets released, generally gets, so, you know, basically distributed. That is what Harshil was, you know, basically alluding to. So that was again a 1 year back thing. As of now, there's nothing like that.
Yeah, yeah, sir. I mean, I was just referring, we are, I mean, we made total income of 204 crores in last quarter and it is around 140 odd crores now. So broadly, I was referring to that degree of 60 odd crores.
So what happens, you know, when you acquire an asset, you have some DESRA and MMR required. When you take to Inuit level, you have some different requirement, right? Because Inuit also have to make, say, you know, some MMR, some DESRA. So as a prudent and as a conservative view, you know, we do that. Maybe because of that, you know, some incremental, say, cash release, which gets, again, distributed. So I think that is what, you know, you'll see the difference quarter to quarter, maybe half year, maybe year to year because of that. I mean, of course, when more number of assets will be acquired, you know, it will lead to a different number. But that's the, you know, basically overall concept what Ashish was trying to explain.
Okay. And sir, I mean, we were, I mean, the acquisition of third ROFO, as you had mentioned, so is it an advanced series? And you mentioned we will be doing it in current quarter. And other,
Yes, this is an advanced series. One should be this quarter, as I said. Two to three should be next quarter. We already started NHAI, NOC and lender NOC process, which we expect once that happens, I think this is, will be a related party. Anyway, we'll go to unit holders for the approval. Once unit holders approves, and of course, you know, board gives in principle, board also approves, then we will go and, you know, go ahead and acquire these assets.
Okay. Sir, one last thing. I think we had around 610 crores of cash reserves last quarter. Which is around 530 crores as on September 8th. So, just a fundamental question, the distribution that we have made, so our NDCF is around 148 crores. So, I mean, were the reserves also utilized or NDCF was self-sufficient? Because I'm just trying to understand that.
I don't think reserve would have been utilized because if you see the entire NDCF, what Harshil was explaining,
yes, if you divide that by the unit, I mean, we'll get that 3.35. So,
no, so if you see the entire NDCF was 266 odd crores, which was basically, you know, what we had got, 176 plus 8 plus 89.25, I think the breakup we had given. Post that, of course, you know, you add back some, you know, some release which happens, then you add whatever, basically, you know, you had some, you know, had some balance at the start of the quarter. Then InvIT also have to basically pay the, you know, its loan what we had taken, right? So there's some finance cost on the borrowing that was, I think, 38 odd crores. Then InvIT had to pay debt that was 52 odd crores. There's some statutory other payments, so, and I think some reserve created under loan agreement. So that was all about 103.53. So if you reduce that from the overall balance, okay, that was coming out to around 145.76. We had some cash surplus. We added that back and 148.91, which worked out to 3.35.
Okay. So I mean, what will be the latest cash reserves available as of September end? Around 530-ish, as I mean, in the other equity mentioned in the financials.
I think we just need to check. We'll be just have it mailed to you separately.
Sure. Okay.
But congratulations, sir. There in the financial statement, you can see that.
Yeah. I'll just confirm it. Yeah, I already seen it. Just confirming, majorly it pertains to only cash reserve. That's it.
Yeah, if you see in the financial, it's there.
Okay. All the best, sir. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, a reminder to all participants of the conference that if you wish to ask a question, you may press star and one on your touchtone phone to join the question queue. Our next question comes from the line of Anant Mundra from My Temple Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello. Thank you for the opportunity, sir. I just wanted to understand. So we have a waiver for MMR reserve. That understanding is correct, right?
At the trust level, yes, we have. But then what happens is, suppose any year MMR is due this year, for example, or next year early thing. And suppose annuity, we also have to time the annuity, right? So suppose whatever the annuity is there, then because if the trust has to do MMR, the money has to come from SPV, right? So as a prudent practice, you do keep some reserves at your SPV level also, so that if the MMR comes, as per the timing of course, matching with the annuities and cash flows and the amount of the MMR, you keep some reserves at the SPV level also.
Okay. And this MMR reserve requirement is a requirement by NHAI or by bankers?
See, bankers, of course, you know, they put MMR. So at the SPV level, generally most of the bankers here. At the InvIT level, of course, we got the waiver, but yeah, in case you want to have, because if suppose you have any MMR due, you should have it. Concession agreement also just talks about vaguely that, you know, you should have reserves in the, you know, properly in case of any major maintenance expenditure is done. So consider under concession agreement also you have some requirements to keep. So as a safer practice, you should, right? Because suppose we have two of the assets, which is my Fagwada Roopnagar, which I think the MMR should be towards Q4 or Q1 of next year. Then I think Varanasi Sangam also, we should have MMR due in 2027. So the amount is due, you know, the one or two annuities are not sufficient to take care of those MMR, right? Because we have to do the debt servicing also. So that's why you need to have some reserve so that, you know, there's no stress in case, you know, as per the timing, you know, it's happening. So that's why as a prudent practice, you do keep some, you know, reserves in form of MMR at the SPV level also.
Okay, and are these requirements factored in by the valuer when they do the valuation?
Yes, they do that. Everything is factored.
Okay. All right. And so my next question was also, previous quarter you had guided that we would be completing one acquisition by the end of Q2. But it seems there's been a delay. So what has been the challenge at that end?
No. So I think there was some work which was to be done by GR. I think, you know, GR. But what happened is because of the incessant rains this time. In fact, in that stretch, even 5-7 days back also, I was talking to GR. And there was, you know, some rain. So what happens, rains are, you know, if any, say, rectification work or balance work which was to be done, rains, you know, you need to wait for the rains to get over, then only you can do. Otherwise, what happens, you do it and then rains again, you know, can basically take, you know, or maybe, you know, disturb it. So that's why I think this time the rains have extended. We are expecting that work should be done by end of November. So maybe by end of November or first half of December, we should be able to take that asset over.
Got it. And so the pipeline that you mentioned, so for FY26, about 4,500 crores of assets, and FY27, 6,000 crores. So like in the previous call, these numbers were slightly lower. So do you see improved visibility on the non-GR assets?
Because that is something, you know, where I can only give guidance. Maybe decently more assured, you know, degree of certainty, a higher degree of certainty. So 4,000 to 4,500 crores, I'm just giving a range for this FY26, and maybe around 6,000 to 6,500 crores next year, putting both ROFO and non-ROFO assets.
And how much would be the contribution of ROFO for FY26 and how much would be contribution of ROFO for FY27?
So ROFO, if you see, is I think 3,000 odd crores maybe ROFO assets and maybe around 1,000 to 1,200 crores maybe ballpark around non-ROFO assets.
FY26 and FY27, how would that breakup be?
27, that is going to be, I think, you can say almost 3,000 crores of maybe 2,700 crores of the non-ROFO assets. And maybe 3,000, it is going to be a ballpark 2,800 non-ROFO and 3,000 to 3,200 ROFO assets.
Got it. So is there some non-binding agreement that you already signed with someone for a non-GR acquisition?
Would not want to divulge those details on the call because that's something, you know, we don't prefer. But yeah, we are in a decent stage of doing it.
Got it. And these assets will again also be maintained by GR itself or the existing developer? How would that work?
No, I think existing developer, I don't think, rather than maybe, you know, in a very select case, that would be the case. Most of the assets what we are acquiring, most of the assets, again, I'm saying, not every, will be maintained by GR.
Okay. And it's safe to assume that IRR would be more lucrative in case of non-GR assets?
Yeah, I think it's safe to, maybe, it's maybe safer to assume that, yes.
Got it. That's it from mine. Thank you. Thanks.
Thank you. A reminder to all participants of the conference that if you wish to ask a question, you may press star and one on your touchtone phone. As there are no further questions, I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Amit Kumar Singh for the closing comments.
Thanks, Arthur. I think thanks everyone for joining the call. We'll keep looking forward for the support and guidance what we are getting from you all. And any development which is required to be brought to your notice, we'll keep doing that. Thank you so much. Thanks again. Thank you.
On behalf of Indus Infra Trust, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us and you may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.